Thanks everyone for being here. Excited that you're joining us. We're going to dive into distance education today. This past week, we released an episode rolling out the K-12 financial literacy curriculum that's now available. It's a free resource. You can access it either at choosefifoundation.org or directly from the homepage at Choosefi. There is a link in the Financial Resilience Toolkit, the Learning Center. And it seems that like right now, this actually something, it would be something that in a vacuum would be valuable, but maybe where a parent or a teacher is kind of scrambling for new resources or a different way of presenting something without what was there or what was assumed would be there just a few months ago, it's particularly applicable. So what we're going to do today is actually bring Mandy back on the show, who's one of the collaborators and creators of this curriculum. And we're going to take a look at distance education through the lens of a teacher, a parent, and the creator of this curriculum, which she happens to be all three. So and what I'd like to do here is a little compare and contrast, because several weeks ago we had Vincent Puglisi on talking about homeschooling from just a parent's perspective. This is going to be a slightly more blended approach. Many teachers are adapting to the new situation, either because their school has adapted right along with this pandemic or because they are a parent and a teacher, and they are having to do so as well. And so I think there's going to be something valuable here. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. Yeah, that certainly was a great setup, and I'm not going to take too much more time here with the preamble. Everybody's familiar with Mandy.
You're reducing me to a preamble? Is that what you call this?
Yeah, come on. A lot of words before we get to the main event here.
I resemble that remark.
Yeah. But yeah, everybody's familiar with Mandy from the episode recently. And yeah, I'm super curious to get the teacher's perspective. We talked a lot about parents, but let's hear it from a teacher. So Mandy, with that, welcome back to Choosefi.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I guess it might be helpful for me to kind of situate where I am, because teachers are in different places right now, just like families are in different places. So this is actually 2.5 weeks since I've been in my classroom, and I'm on spring break, whatever that is at this point. So prior to spring break, our district actually completed 2 full weeks of e-learning. So we did not take any of the days off. I know different districts, different states did different things, but our district actually wanted to hit the ground running and move to online learning. So we did it. And now, according to our governor, we're in it for another month. So we've got this little break, and then we've got at least 3 more weeks.
So Mandy, from an actual teaching perspective, what has changed most dramatically in terms of like what you're, clearly you're not in the classroom, you know, you're not there with the kids, but are you teaching the same lessons? Is it truncated? What are we talking about?
Yeah. So I guess there's 2 things that we probably should address that I think families already get a sense of. But to answer your question immediately, no, I'm not teaching the same exact things. I am, however, using curriculum maps. So we have standards that basically spell out, you know, what kids need to accomplish before they go to high school. I teach 8th grade this year. And so now it's really just been working with different teams of teachers saying, well, we were supposed to do debates in the spring. How are we going to do that? What does that look like now? So to make sure that we're hitting the skills, but definitely we're just having to do things in a totally different way. But I think to take a couple steps back, and I think where a lot of school districts are, is remembering that schools do more than just teach students math and science and social studies and language arts. And that first weekend that they called school, I know it was just this massive undertaking. Our district keeps saying this phrase, all hands on deck, that just to make sure kids' basic needs are met. Like, does everybody have food? Kids that are part of the free and reduced lunch program, how are we getting meals to them with all of the store closings, the restaurant closings, the turmoil in the job market? Do we have new families that maybe don't have access to food? Kids that our school nurse would keep an eye on, counselors, social workers. So really, before we worry at all about the standards, you know, does everybody have a safe, warm place to be? And can they even access the curriculum? So I think that foundation has to be there before e-learning can take place. And I think that that's a little bit of the delay that maybe some parents were seeing, especially if that doesn't apply to your family. You might not always see the different things that schools provide, and making sure that, you know, everybody is supported at least as best as we can initially is something that I think has to be put in place before we can even worry about curriculum.
So Mandy, I mean, just the same way you set that up, before we talk about a curriculum in education, we got to realize that schools in many cases are offering a safety net for children that maybe many people have not appreciated or not realized. And with that, you know, realization, what is actually happening now? So I guess from the school's perspective, what if they find out that a child is not in a safe situation with the change in environment? They are not, they don't have food, they don't have basic necessities. How are schools responding to that right now?
Yeah, I think every school and every district has a different bag of tricks. They have different resources, they have different personnel. I'm by no means the expert at any of this in my district, but I can speak to some things that I know, you know, people have put in place. And the big thing I think that started was, how do we get meals to people? And when you're in a pandemic and everybody's supposed to stay 6 to 12 feet away, I think that really changes the approach. Like, this is not a one-time thing or a couple of days with snow. This is like a long-term solution. So how do we keep the cafeteria workers safe? How do we keep the transportation people safe? I think some districts are actually sending meals out into the community, and other districts are setting up like almost like the drive-through at your favorite fast food place, where families can pull up, stay in their vehicles, and make the transfer that way. So I think that is definitely something. And I would imagine the logistics will continue to change as districts reassess the need, right, to make sure that we're doing what's best and that we're getting the kids fed that need to be fed.
So what state do you teach in?
Illinois.
All right. So if individuals, you know, and obviously you're more knowledgeable about the Illinois system, but if individuals hearing this realize, oh, wow, that's a really important need, and they want to help in some capacity, I mean, how can parents and members of a community, how can they aid the local schools with this type of mission?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much for asking that, because I think that is really important that we just all keep asking, like, how can we be in this together? So I can speak a little bit to our district and then generally. Our district actually has an education program that invites donations from the community and also from educators, staff members. So they actually sent something out saying, like, this is totally unprecedented, not just in terms of feeding the kids we normally feed, but meeting the needs of everybody who's now maybe suffering in this new job market. So because we had that foundation in place, I think that really kind of gave our community a leg up, because you had people asking, like, how do I help? And we had a way to help. And I think a lot of districts handle things differently. They might work just with a social worker, or it might be a particular administrator that's in charge of it. There might be a whole student services team. But I think the very best thing you can do as an interested community member is to just send the email or pick up the phone. It's not a burden. I know a lot of families are saying, like, I don't want to reach out, you're busy enough. No, like, we love that. And that's, you know, that's what this is really going to take, that whole It's a Village thing. So any ideas that you have, any resources that you might have access to, that I think certainly asking the question is a great place to start.
So Mandy, I know we're talking about all hands on deck here, and I kind of want to go back to the actual learning, you know, and the e-learning perspective. So, you know, obviously we're only a couple of weeks into this, but I know it sounds like your school district is going much more in depth into the actual learning than my kids' district is as of now, at least. And I'm curious, just from a teacher's perspective, like, so you have normally a 7+ hour school day, right? But obviously there's lunch built in there. There are electives, which, not to minimize the importance of them in any way, but you know, you've got art, you've got music, you've got gym, foreign language. Like, are all of those things happening from your district, or is it just like the quote unquote main subjects? Like, what are we talking about? And like, what's realistic, I guess?
Well, I can tell you what's happening. What's realistic maybe remains to be seen.
Yeah, a bit of a loaded question there. Sorry.
But so I think what families need to know, and maybe this has not been communicated equally everywhere, is that the state says you need to do this. So like the Illinois State Board of Education says, you know, here's, I guess in the business world, we'd say like the minimum viable product, right? And then you have individual school districts assessing, here's what we have access to, here's what we know about our kids, here's what we know about our staff, our technology, our resources. And then they're figuring out how can we meet, you know, what the state is saying, and then maybe how can we do even more. So right now, and it will change, I think that is the theme of everyone's life for the next couple of months, right? Like it's fluid, it's a work in progress. But we were asked when we started e-learning, and families were told it should be about 5 hours of work a day, practice, instruction, homework. I mean, there's no boundaries anymore, but that could really unfold in a variety of different ways. But my middle schoolers absolutely are getting instruction from all of their teachers. So not just the core classes like math and language arts. Our facts teachers making videos on how to make your own masks and where you can donate them. You've got PE teachers like, how do you work out in your house? How can you work out safely outside? So I think we really had a leg up because we were in a district that had a lot of technology already. And thankfully, all the ed tech people seemed to be in agreement that they took down their paywalls, they took down their subscriptions, and they said, like, if you can get these kids these devices, we'll make everything free for as long as we need to, so that finances aren't an extra barrier here.
As a teacher that is teaching an entire curriculum, what are the best resources that you have found to this point to aid you in that now that you're moving to this distance learning model?
Yeah, so there's just a ton. Our district in particular uses the platform Canvas, but I know there's Google Classroom, there's Schoology, there's a ton of different platforms for people who are like, I'm not in education, I don't know what you're saying. That would be like your Microsoft Teams or something like that, where it's a hub for information for the kids. But then I'm using a lot of asynchronous tools because I know that not every kid has access at the same time throughout the day. So we use this tool called Flipgrid, where I can record, like they just did argument speeches. So I recorded myself. We talked about, you know, what that should look like. And then they have the opportunity to record themselves and give each other feedback. So I guess it's really just been kind of looking through the bag of tricks and then seeing what fits the situation. There are a lot of really good tools. Maybe I can share, and if you link them.
Yeah. Well, if anything you can give us, we'll have linked up in the show notes for this episode. Yeah. That's just kind of for teachers. I just wanted to spend a half minute there. I realize the vast majority of our audience is going to be in the position of parents, and they're to some degree, they're subject to what the school district, and then by extension, the teacher is doing. And then they're trying to figure out, should I or can I fill in the gaps with something else? And I guess that's kind of what I was thinking maybe you could speak to next is, you know, in the absence of what your school district is rolling out, like what's the next best thing?
Yes, thank you so much for that setup. I think if I had to say one thing to parents and family members as a teacher, it would be thank you. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your understanding. Some of you I know are listening to me and you're saying, wait, in what universe is that happening? And quite honestly, it has not been a requirement yet for the state. It's just something that we were in a position, our district was in a position to be able to do. And I think we'll start to see more structure come out to families. But I also think, you know, you're starting to see homeschoolers, professional homeschoolers, I guess, for lack of a better word, come out and say, whoa, 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 families, like pump the brakes. The way that one-on-one learning looks is so different than a classroom of 32 kids. So I think a lot of parents are going into this experience thinking, like you had mentioned, Brad, about, well, it's a 7.5 hour day. And what does that look like? And hey, my kid did that math worksheet in 20 minutes. Or, oh my gosh, my kid's been doing the same math worksheet for 4 days because they're confused. I think we're really looking at individualized instruction. And that is very different than classroom teaching. So I think teachers are really figuring out, how do we help parents? And I think that's coming. More of that will be coming in the next couple of weeks as we all get our bearings, I think.
Yeah, Mandy, I love how this is really a rethink, right? Which is pretty wild. I mean, you're talking about asynchronous teaching, right? And it reminds me of the revolution that happened with television, with the DVR, yeah. Right? I mean, it's not impossible to imagine that going forward, that, oh, wow, we used to think that a teacher had to teach to all those kids at the same time, as opposed to, like you just said, individualized learning. It doesn't mitigate the need for teachers, obviously. If anything, it allows you, probably, I can make an argument, to do a better job, right? Like where you can actually, you can record the lesson and then spend time individually with children who potentially need it. Like, I mean, again, I'm just kind of thinking out loud because I don't know if this is going to happen anytime soon, but like, that's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. So I don't know, like, have you thought about, obviously we're looking for, you know, Jonathan has a little segment on silver linings now in the Choose a Vibe podcast. And clearly nobody would have wished this, you know, to the education system, to life, to the world, et cetera. But like, have you thought about silver linings?
Absolutely. So I think that we're going to see a couple of things come out of this. And like you said, you know, I wouldn't wish this on anybody or anyone for any reason, and certainly not the situation that we're in right now. But I think we are going to see how much education really is a partnership, and it really does take a village. And we want parents to be involved. We want parent feedback. We want questions. And also we want to know, like, if something is working. I had a parent send an email to me last week, but they copied my boss on it. And I just burst into tears when I opened the email, because all she said was like, thank you, this is great. And I knew it wasn't great. Hopefully we'll get to great. Great's coming.
From good to great.
Yeah, exactly. So just to see the effort. But I think also teachers, I keep trying to reach out to my families and say, you know, thank you. I know you're trying to work from home, or maybe you're trying to figure out what work even looks like at this point. But just the fact that you're checking emails for your kids and encouraging them to log on. So I think we're hopefully going to see stronger relationships. You know, I have had the fortune to work in a great community, but I think all of our communities will hopefully come out of this even stronger. But I think also we're going to start to recognize education moves at a glacial pace, but that is not how teachers work. Teachers are the most flexible and innovative people I have ever met, and they're so collaborative. You know, it's not, hey, this was great for my 80 kids. It's, hey, this one thing worked really well. How can I put it online, or who can I email it to because I want it to work for everybody? And who can I get ideas from? So I think it's this community of educators that's really willing to try things out and say, whew, that was a disaster, don't do that. Or, you know, how I'm struggling with this. And you see teachers that are just pivoting on a dime. They try something on Monday, and by Tuesday, they realize that was not the tool for me. So Wednesday, they're rolling something new out to their kids. And teachers know that, right? I do that all the time in my classroom. Every educator who's listening does that. You plan a lesson and you can read the room and you're like, shoot, this is not, this is not what I thought it was going to be. So you make that change. But I think now, you know, families are kind of getting that sneak peek a little bit. And then also educators are really vocalizing that to one another on like social media as well. So I think that is definitely a silver lining.
You talked about this partnership between teachers and parents, and it's so critical. And I'm curious, you talked about it a little bit in the last answer, but what would you want from your parents? What would you want the parents to know, like as far as contacting you, what they can do to help aid their, you know, their children? I know you said checking emails and things like that, but like, I'm thinking from my own perspective, like we don't want to bother the teachers because we imagine that they are just beyond overloaded dealing with this new situation. But we do want to keep in touch with them in some way. Like, what does a good partnership look like there?
I think a good partnership, first of all, it just starts with me trusting my families and knowing, obviously, they want what's best for their child, right? Nobody knows a child better than their parents and guardians. But also them, and I feel so fortunate to be in this situation where I feel like my parents, my families are really like, okay, it might not all work, but she wants what's best for my kids too. So I think you start from there. And then if you're in a situation where the educators have not yet reached out, maybe you just send one email and say, what do you want from me? Would weekly check-ins help? Would daily check-ins help? Do you want me to just wait for you to say something? I think just knowing that the lines of communication are open, it's huge. And certainly if you see your child struggling or if you see your child really succeeding, tell us. I can't tell you, I got an email the Friday before we were supposed to start spring break from a parent saying like, hey, you're running these review sessions where kids can log on and play these games. And I can't imagine a week without that. Can you do more of it? So now we're on break and I've got kids that are coming to hang out with me in the afternoon and play like vocab review because a parent reached out and said, you know, I know my 13-year-old's too cool to tell you this, but I know they're having fun. So I think nobody is expecting perfection. I'm not expecting you to do my job as a teacher. And I think you're definitely not expecting me to do your job as a parent. So I think just being willing to communicate, you know, how can we complement each other? How can we balance each other out? And if your kiddo is really struggling, that's my number one priority. I want to know. I don't take offense to that. Like, I want to help. And I know every teacher is approaching this right now. Like, how can we help our kiddos?
I want to talk a little bit about the accidental homeschooler resource that we put together. And I want to do that through the lens of, in many districts, not yours apparently, but in many districts, the schools have been kicked back on their feet. They have not yet been able to give instructions to the teachers, right, to the parents about what the bar is, what the expectation is. It's just, okay, we're still scrambling. We're going to figure this, yep, out. We're still scrambling. Parents are now figuring out daycare. You know, yeah, that whole situation has disappeared. Preschool, that situation has disappeared. Many of them have kids at home and they're trying to maintain their jobs and all the stress of the finances and their own work from home relationship. And then also their children's education. And they're trying to figure out, what's the bar? Should I do anything? Do we do nothing? And we talked with Vincent a couple weeks ago about the idea of interest-led learning. So in the frame that I just described, where we don't have a structure that's being top-down driven by the education department of that county, that district, that state, what is the role of interest-led learning right now, and how do you visualize that getting rolled out to different age groups?
So I think a couple of things. I think everybody, myself included, I have a toddler who's not in preschool, and my goodness, do we miss Miss Anne every day. Oh, my. Yes, we – so I'm right there with you in that regard. But I think everybody just has to take a deep breath and remember – something that we all know about kids is that they're so resilient and they learn all the time. It's not like kids are only learning when they're in the four walls of our school district or their classroom even. Like, they're learning. And as parents, right, we all know that when we've had kids repeat something and then we're like, oh, when did they hear me say that? So I think they're always picking things up. And you know your child. You might not be an expert in all of education. I'm not an expert in all of education, but we're experts in our own children. So if you know that you have a kiddo that really benefits from structure, look at the schedules online. Look at the schedule in the start of those accidental homeschooler resources and see if a schedule like that would work for your family. And then I think kind of go from there. There's a ton of resources in that accidental homeschooler. If you open up some of the bingo boards, I think the older grade levels can maybe be more self-directed. So if you need to hop on a conference call and you don't have any definitive curriculum to give your kiddo to work on, I think you could hand them that and say, Stephen, get two boxes done. And then in an hour, let's sit together and share with me what you learned. Or maybe you can show me on your laptop, or if your computer hooks up to your home TV, have the kiddo kind of show the family what they worked on that evening. But I think the big thing to remember is that we're all trying. And if it doesn't work this week, that doesn't mean it won't work next week. And if a kiddo is really struggling, something's not working for your child, I think don't hesitate to reach out to other people and say, wow, this really has me stumped. Or conversely, if you find something that just totally rocks and you're like, ah, yes, more people need to know about this, you know, we'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts there just with what we're seeing like in our own personal life, because we have two young children, one toddler, 1 3-year-old, and it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy. And Dani is, you know, up to the task. She really leans in. But one thing we both realized, and it's so easy when you're kind of stressed out to not do it, is that the one thing he really does need to focus on and spend time on is this idea of self-play. Because it's so easy to have mommy and daddy just as a companion because you're always available, you're always ready to do it. So one thing that we've been trying to, like at that age group, and this is unique to toddlers, but at that age group is building in twice a day, a small period of time that's very specifically self-play. Set a blanket down, set some of his favorite toys out, a book out, whatever, and build up, but just start with like 10, 15 minutes. Stay on the blanket, play with your toys for that 10 to 15, and you can build it out from there depending on, you know, how eager they are to do that. But that's just something that, you know, that's very selfishly something that we're focusing on, and it's really good for us. And for us, if we can just do that, like we'll figure out the rest of it. And then as you know, as you have older kids, I would imagine that there's more opportunities. Brad, I mean, your kids are at that kind of that next age group. You're perfectly situationed to kind of respond with what does it look like for you guys?
Yeah, well, they are really doing a lot of self-directed learning at this point, which is pretty cool. I mean, self-directed might be a bit of a stretch, let's say, but mostly. So we have kind of a loose concept of what we would love for them to do each day, which really at this point, because our school district has not given out a ton of guidance, and I think that is shifting as I think our local county just came out with a decision yesterday about the future of the year. So I suspect strongly it's going to get some more information from the actual teachers. But the last couple of weeks, we've been basically just having them do math and reading every single day. And my younger daughter started using Khan Academy for mathematics, which is awesome. And she sits and reads for probably 3 hours a day. And I mean, if I can get 3 hours a day of reading and a half hour or more of math in a day, that's a pretty successful day from my perspective. And also, like we've talked about ad nauseum on the show, like I think the value of teaching that come from like some of the board games that we play is almost incalculable. Like the strategy, the long-term thinking, the adaptation to what other people are doing and based on what's going on with what you've done, et cetera. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of learning going on generally. We're not just sitting around watching, you know, Netflix all day. So anyway, that's kind of what we have going. I don't know, Mandy, I see you nodding along. So hopefully we're passing the teacher's test there.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So before spring break started, I sent my poor families another email. You know, you talk about, it's so funny because it goes both ways, how you were like, oh, we never want to bother the teacher. And I'm always like, oh, apologies, family. Here's my third email of the week. But I sent them just kind of a take a deep breath. We'll all take a deep breath. But even my soon-to-be high schoolers, if you look at the data, and this is what I emailed my families, one of the most compelling pieces of data is what independent reading does, and not independent reading in between making TikToks, but true, I'm going to sit down for 15 or 20 minutes a day and just read something that I love. If you spend any amount of time looking at the research that's been done around that, those kiddos are leaps and bounds ahead of their peers who are not readers. And I think when students make the transition to high school, they lose that, right? They think that sacrificing, you know, that my schedule's busier, my classes are more rigorous, so I can't read for fun anymore. So I just sent parents a whole list, like, here's how you can get audiobooks and ebooks from our school library. Here's how you can get them from the public library. Audible has something going on. Scribd has something going on right now. Like, if you do nothing else, like besides get your kid to sit down and read, that would make me so happy as an English teacher. Like, if you could come back and say, my kid read something they loved every day for a half an hour, I would be like, we have won the school year. I think parents, you know, look at that and you think, well, I'm buying myself a little bit of time so I can check email or get some work done. But you're actually doing something huge for your child that maybe sometimes gets lost when our schedules are more full. I think that is one thing that we're all having to wrestle with now, right? Like, none of us wanted to slow down like this, but maybe we're finding out that there was some clutter in our day-to-day lives, and now we have a little bit more time. You know, it's not how anyone wanted to learn the lesson, but if more people are reading and more families are sitting down learning together, you talk about a silver lining. I think we found it.
And I guess the last thing that I want to spend a little time on, it just because this is what the Choose a Vi Foundation has put together, specifically the, well, I guess actually, before I even mention that, Brad, you and I talked about Rob's book, The Simple Startup, and how you're using that as a project with your kids. So talk about interest-led learning. What a great opportunity. Think through the process of building a business and talk about a board game, all the mentality that goes in there. And that's a workbook, and we can have a link for that in show notes. But I wanted to get that out of the way to talk also about two free resources that the foundation has created. The Accidental Homeschooler, which you mentioned in passing, but I really want to make sure people understand that it's there and how it might help at a time like this. Mm-hmm. And also the K-12 financial literacy curriculum, which is, it's a la carte. Take what works for you. It's completely free. And for different age groups, there's some valuable money lessons and finance lessons that you could weave in. What a great opportunity to be able to spend some time instilling some of those at a time where all of that information seems like it's really important stuff to know. What are your thoughts on that? And how would you advise someone maybe consider weaving that into their day if they have some bandwidth for it?
Sure. Yeah. So if you take a look at the Accidental Homeschooler, there are a couple of weeks worth of activities that are created and available for anybody who's interested. And it's sorted by grade level. So you could look and say, all right, I have a toddler and I have a middle schooler, or I have two elementary kids. You know, maybe I've got a kiddo in first grade and a fifth grader. There's certainly resources for high school students too. But I think you figure out wherever your child is at, wherever your learner is at. And then if they're older, so in elementary, middle school, and high school, there are these bingo boards that have activities for kids to work through. And there's different directions, like if you want a household competition, or if they want to maybe challenge a classmate virtually or a friend in the neighborhood. But the activities really are designed, many of them have a financial lens, but a lot of them, it's like, here's really cool math games, or here's a great site for you to explore different college majors that you might be interested in, or here's a stock market game. And like you were saying, it's little chunks of time for kids to really be self-directed learners. And then if you have the opportunity to come back as a family later and say, like, hey, what couple of boxes did you work on today? What did you learn? Or can you show me? Because anyone who's listening, if you have older kids, I feel your pain when you ask them, like, what'd you learn? Stuff, I don't know. So a workaround for that would be to say, show me what you learned, or teach me what you learned. Don't let them say, like, yeah, stuff. I did it. I learned some stuff. But I think there are a ton of activities there. So I know you would both ask, like, if there were things I would recommend as a teacher, if you're not being provided, there's something that's linked for all the grade levels. Scholastic is a huge asset all the time. They're a company that does books for kids, but tons of resources at really reasonable price points all the time. And they have basically produced an entire curriculum for every content area for free, and they're putting it up day by day on their site for every grade level. So if you are still scratching your head and you're waiting for your district to come up with something, that's in the bingo boards for Accidental Homeschooler. So you might not use the whole bingo board. You might just find one resource from Accidental Homeschooler and run with that. But I think we're all picking and choosing and all the cliches, right? You're throwing things at the wall, trying to see what sticks. So I think that there's a whole menu of options, quite literally, and we'd love for families to give us some feedback on that too.
Let me ask you if this is appropriate or if this would be useful. Do you think that right now when we're talking about blue skies, like we're trying to create this as we go, is there value for teachers, maybe either a math teacher, or is there value there for them going to the K-12 financial literacy curriculum and picking to see if there's anything there that they could use? Like, you're teaching middle school students, like, is there any sort of a la carte thing where we're not talking about rolling out a whole curriculum, but here's something you could do in the short term?
Yeah. So actually, my poor social studies teachers that I work with. So the way the state of Illinois does their financial literacy piece is if you look at the social studies standards, there's actually a financial literacy component to it. So I've just been sharing this with everybody that I know who teaches social studies. And I'm like, hey, if you don't know what your curriculum could look like, I know you have to teach these standards. Look at these lessons. You can't get through 9 units, you know, in another month or two. But can you pull a couple of units that seem like they'd be really interesting or topical? There's some lessons on just introducing the stock market. And we all know that we're going to keep hearing a lot about the stock market. So just giving kids an entry point, and that's all curriculum that can stand on its own or spiral out. So definitely look through that. There are assessments, like you were saying. I know we think multiple choice, Scantron assessments, but not like that. Real life project-based learning assessments, menu planning. I know the grocery store, it's more like a scavenger hunt at this point, right?
Trying on the find paper aisle, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, could you spend time as a family talking about, you know, what do we have in our cupboard? What meals could we make? What does it cost? Are grocery prices going up? Like, there's so much real life learning that we can do in this situation. And I think that there are tons of resources that are at least starting points in that K-12 curriculum if parents want to take a peek. And if teachers are listening too, if you want to take a peek now and then certainly when you're ready to think about next school year too.
All right. So Mandy, let's say that parents take us up on this offer, teachers take us up on this offer. They a la carte pick what works for you with some of the resources that we just mentioned. They have a question. They have a question about implementation. They want to follow up with something. How can they do that? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. So depending on how you access the resources, the Accidental Homeschooler is on the Choosify site, and that is just there for you. But then right underneath the downloads, you can enter your contact information and you'll get updates anytime new material is released. So welcome to teacher life, right? The Sunday scaries when you're like, oh, what do my lesson plans look like for the week? You'll get that email update and say there's new stuff coming out. And, you know, feel free to hit reply to any of those emails and just say, this worked well. I need more of this. I just want like all these resources from here until summer. Or, you know, I noticed that there's not a lot of this activity. Can you point me in the right direction? And then there's the same kind of contact box set up for the K-12 curriculum page as well. So just, you know, go ahead, fill that out. It's real people, real teachers answering those emails, and we'll get in touch because we're all in this together, right?
Awesome. Mandy, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thank you.
If you got value from today's episode, press subscribe on the platform you're listening to this on. Just let the provider know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. We will see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.